WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is Shedding Light on Kick Storage. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2, the agenda. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to Kick storage topics. Next, our panel of experts will answer the pre-submitted questions as well as the ones that they provided. Then we will open the lines for a live Q&A period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like our panel of experts to introduce themselves for today's call. First, we have Sarah Bertram. Please go ahead, Sarah.
Thanks, Dave. Hi, my name is Sarah Bertram. I've been with IBM for 29 years, doing some form of software support and service that whole time. My first 12 years, I worked on a VM-related product called RSCS. And for the past 17 years, I've been with the CICS Level 2 team. I enjoy working with customers and debugging problems, especially problems related to storage issues.
Thank you, Sarah. Next, we have Byron Baldwin. Please go ahead, Byron.
Hi, my name is Byron Baldwin. I am also a CICS Level 2 support technology team, and I have been with IBM for 15 years. All 15 have been with CICS technical support. Thank you.
Thank you, Byron. Next, we have Andy Wright. Please go ahead, Andy.
Oh, good morning, everyone. My name is Andy Wright. I work in the CICS Level 3 team in Hursley in the UK. I've worked for IBM in Kix for 25 years now in the change team. I may have met some of you at various conferences or at Impact over the years. I've also worked on a number of red books with the ITSO organization as well.
Thank you, Andy. And finally, we have Julian Horn. Please go ahead, Julian.
Hello, everybody. My name is Julian Horn. I've worked for IBM for 25 years, and I've spent all my time working on Kix. Most of that time has been spent working in the Kix Level 3 team in Hursley, but at the start of this year, I moved over into the Kix development organization.
Thank you, Julian. Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, please go ahead, Byron.
During this presentation, we will plan to shed light on CICS storage and its functionalities and capabilities when used in Kix support, in support Kix TS environment. This discussion will be covering how Kix storage is managed. We will provide understanding as to what it means for CICS to be short on storage and also demystify what a storage violation entails. Also, the presentation will cover the SIP parameters as well as discuss the storage tuning parameters which affect storage control. Now we'll turn the presentation back to David.
Thank you, Byron. We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were provided by the panel as well as any pre-submitted questions from our customers. I will now hand the presentation over to our panel experts by moving on to question number 1 on slide number 5. Please go ahead, Julian.
Thank you. So the first question is, how does Kix manage storage? So if we go on to the next slide. Okay, so this is a high-level overview of what happens when you start a Kix system. In the early stages of Kix initialization, we reserve virtual storage below the line based on a SIP parameter called DSA LIM. And we also reserve storage above the 16 megabyte line based on the SIP EDSA LIM value. The DSA LIM can be specified up to 16 megabytes. EDSA LIM can go up to 2 gigabytes. In practice, you wouldn't be able to start a Kix system with either of those two values, especially below the line, because other things will be using storage below the line. Once Kix is started, you can actually update these values using the operator command CMT set DSA LIM and set EDSA LIM. Generally, you'd be increasing these values rather than reducing them. Also, during Kix initialization, we set an internal GDSA LIM value. And this is the above-the-bar limit, which we set to the MBS MEM limit value. So this is not a configurable value. This is something that KIX sets dynamically as part of storage manager initialization. But we have a minimum value, which is 6 gigabytes. And if you start KIX region, which has a MEM limit less than 6 gigabytes, we will append KIX, and you will see DFH SM0602 on the console. So at the end of KIX initialization, we've got three areas, two that KIX has reserved, below the line, above the line, but we don't actually reserve storage above the bar. We just ensure that there is sufficient storage for KIX to run with. So if we move now on to slide 7, okay. So how do we manage these big pools of storage? Well, KIX divides these storage areas into extents. And extents are allocated to what are called DSAs using extent size multiples. And these extent size multiples are fixed. Below 16 megabyte, we have 1/4 megabyte extents. Above 16 megabyte, we have 1 megabyte extents. And above the bar, we also have 1 megabyte extents. So each of these DSAs has different characteristics, and I've listed some of them here. These are all the DSAs for above the line. So we've got EC DSA, which is always in key 8. We've got EU DSA, which is either key 8 or key 9, and that's controlled by the storage protect SIP parameter. So if you've got storage protect equals yes, then we'll allocate EU DSA in key 9. Storage protect no, it will be in key 8. The same applies to ESDSA. The key is controlled by the storage prot SIP parameter. ERDSA comes in either key 0 or key 8, and that's controlled by the rent pugum SIP parameter. If you have rent pugum equal protect, ERDSA is in key 0, otherwise it's in key 8. And we've got a fifth DSA above the line there, ETDSA, which has some subpools which are used for security, and that's always in key 8 as well. So if we then move on to slide 8, so how do we use this storage out of the DSAs? Well, every KIX get main allocates storage from what's called a KIX subpool. And now there are hundreds of different KIX subpools, and they are for many different purposes. So, there are two basic subpool types. The first one is task subpools, which I use to satisfy execkix get main and execkix set commands. And the second type are domain storage subpools used internally by KIX. So all the KIX control blocks, which are allocated as part of a KIX run, will come from domain storage subpools, but transactions tend to allocate storage from task storage subpools. And each of the subpools that is created has an affinity with one of the KIX DSAs. And these subpools, or the storage for subpools, is allocated in fixed block sizes. So the page sizes are 4K, are coming 4K multiples apart from EU DSA, which uses 64K page sizes. And although I haven't mentioned it there, the page size for above the bar storage is set to 1 megabyte. So that concludes the slides for question one. So now if I turn over to Sarah, she will address the slides for question two.
Thank you, Julian. Moving on to slide 9, our next question is, what does it mean if CICS is short on storage? Moving on to slide 10. Most simply put, and this is very high level, is if a CICS cannot satisfy one of these get main requests, a short on storage condition will be flagged. I try to talk a little bit about what CICS does when a request for storage is made. So when a request for DSA storage is made, CICS will attempt to satisfy this request by first looking at the extents already allocated to that particular DSA the request is for. It will look to see if there's a large enough contiguous spree area to satisfy this request. If none is found, it then will attempt to allocate a new extent from the unallocated DSA and will give this new extent to this particular DSA that Julian mentioned, all of them, to now manage and handle. And in that way, it would satisfy that request. Now, if it does not find enough free area in an existing extent and is unable to allocate a new extent, well, then CICS needs to take some action to try to prevent an SOS from occurring. And one of the things it'll do is it'll perform program compression, which means it will release storage associated with non-resident programs that are currently not in use. The whole idea is trying to free up enough storage, again, to satisfy this request. It will then search, if it still cannot satisfy the request once freeing up some of that program storage, it then can try to go find a total free extent in a different DSA. Again, we would be above the line, we'd be looking for an above the line extent, and if the get name was for below the line, we'd be looking for free extents in the below the line DSAs. And the idea is CICS will allow an extent to be stolen or given to another DSA in order to satisfy the request. But the key there is that entire extent, so if it's below the line, it would be the quarter meg size, and if it's above the line, it's a meg extent, that would all have to be free in order to be given to a different DSA to satisfy the request. If those actions fail and we can't do any of those, then that is when CICS declares a short on storage condition. Moving to slide 11. So once the short on storage condition occurs, CICS will notify us by putting a message out to the console, and I've listed them there. If the request for storage was below the 16 meg, it would be the DFH SM 0131 message. If it was for above the line but below the 2 gig line, then that would be a DFH SM 0133 message. And then for above the bar, we have a DFH SM 0606 message. So while CICS is in this short on storage condition, CICS will defer new attach requests. It does this in the hopes to allow the existing tasks that are in the system that they're allowed to complete. And when they complete, their storage would be freed up. And the hopes is that when they free their storage, storage would be now available to satisfy the request. And if that does occur, where the short on storage condition can be cleared, CICS will put out messages to the console, such as DFH SM 0132 and DFH SM 0134 or DFH SM 0607 to indicate that CICS is no longer short on storage. Moving on to slide 12. So here, I just was trying to think of some things. I mean, short on storage has come in many different flavors. No two are the same. And, you know, there are very different approaches that you can take to try to investigate them. Typically, here, we would want and need a dump at the time of the short on storage in order to get to the root cause. So on this slide, I just mentioned some things that might be in consideration or looked at when dealing with short on storage conditions. And, you know, possibly your workload has increased. And so it might be just a matter of increasing a need to increase your DSA limb or EDSA limb. Another possibility is your max task setting is just too high for your workload, and it might need to be lowered to utilize less storage. And then you might have an application that for some reason is just needs a lot of storage. It's a storage hog. And in that case, you might want to utilize the T-class function to limit the number of simultaneous transactions that can run, you know, limit to only one or two and let them complete versus allowing, you know, four to come in, and now you get in a short on storage condition and kind of a deadlock. So that would be a good utilization of T-class. So as I said, short on storage are just all different flavors, and these were just some things that we look at or consider when dealing with them. So that's all I had on short on storage. Now I'm going to move to slide 13, and this is another storage topic of what exactly is a storage violation. And moving on to slide 14. So how do you know if you've had a storage violation? I'm sure many of you out there have had many storage violations since it's one of our biggest hitters. Well, basically, again, this is kind of high level, you know, the way you know you've had a storage violation is CICS puts out a message and takes a dump. CICS will put out the DFH SMO102 message, and by default, it will take a system dump unless you've suppressed it. So here I want to talk about how CICS knows a storage violation has occurred. And for that, we need to understand how the storage, how CICS manages the storage. So when a task requests task storage, not from the other internal subpools that we're dealing with the task storage, CICS puts an 8-byte checksum at the beginning and at the end of this piece of storage that will be passed back to the application. Now, CICS, this is all internal that CICS is putting these checksums. So in order to make room for these checksums, CICS increases the length of the get main request by a minimum of 16 bytes to account for these checksums. And on the slide, I show you the four different examples of these checksums. They represent four different tasks, subpools for the CICS and user class storage, and then for below and above the line. The XXXXX represents the 5-character task number. Now if we move on to slide 15, the leading zone will always start at offset 0. This is the way it's designed by KIX, and the trailing zone will always start at an offset 8. So the address that CICS passes back to the application on a get main request will always be an address ending with an address of 8. So it's always at an offset 8. And this is because of that leading checksum that CICS puts at the beginning of the storage. Now on the slide, I've given you an example of a piece of user 24 task storage. In this case, it's for task number 00116, and this is displayed from, you can find this type of display from the AP domain in a dump. You can see I've highlighted the leading checksum in blue and the trailing checksum in purple. In this case, the application requested 20 bytes of user storage below the line, but CICS actually get mained hex 30 bytes of storage to account for the hex 10 bytes of checksums that we add. The address that would have been passed back to the application in this example would have been 105668. And you can see in this example, hopefully, that the you know, leading zone is at an offset 0, and that trailing zone is at an offset, in this case, 28, or address 105688. The key with, you know, these checksums is they should never be altered. They should never be touched because the, in this case, the application only asked for 20 bytes, and that's what we gave them. So CICS compares these checksums at the free main time when the storage is freed. Now, the storage can be either be explicitly free mained by the task, but more typically what we see is that CICS free mains the storage on behalf of the task at task termination. And if they do not match, that indicates an application has modified storage outside of what it get means, and CICS flags a storage violation by issuing the DFHSM0102 message. So that's just high level what a storage violation is, and I'm going to now pass it on to Andy to continue with the next question.
Thank you, Sarah. So if we can move on to FOIL 16, please. The question is, what storage SIT parameters are available? So moving on to FOIL 17, I've broken down some of the more relevant parameters that you can specify relating to storage. So we'll start off with DSA LIM and EDSA LIM, which Julian has already mentioned in his earlier answer. So this is where Kix will reserve virtual storage up front during Kix initialization. And the DSA LIM is the amount of storage that you will get for Kix's use below the line, and the EDSA LIM is the equivalent limit for above-the-line storage. Now, as Julian said, we don't externalize a GDSA LIM parameter for specification. We use the MEM limit setting for above-the-bar storage limitation. So DSA LIM and EDSA LIM are the traditional ways that you can limit the amount of storage that Kix has available for its use during the run. And internally, what Kix will do is divide up these areas into extents, which it will then allocate out as required to the different DSAs within Kix. So below the line, we have the Kix, the user, the shared, and the read-only DSAs. And similarly, above the line, we have the extended equivalents of those. And the size of the extents that Kix will allocate will vary depending on whether you're above or below the line, and also whether you're using transaction isolation. So for transaction isolation, for example, the UDSA extents will be in 1 megabyte chunks. You can change the DSA limits while Kix is up and running, and if you do, it's stored for local catalog, and when that's done, that will override non-initial restarts based on your SIP value. So you can modify the limits if you want to. Now, related to those limits, there are some equivalent SIP parameters, system initialization parameters, which can be used to specify the initial size of the particular DSAs that Kix can use. But these are not usually necessary in an environment, and they're not recommended to be set. It's much better to allow Kix to allocate the extent usage within its DSAs as and when required. But these are provided typically for guidance with IBM, and for example, they can be there if you've experienced fragmentation issues, but we wouldn't normally recommend having to set those. There are a couple of SIP parameters worth mentioning because they do have a direct bearing on the way that we use storage within the address space. There's the Kix internal trace table size SIP parameter, TRTABSZ, and this is the internal storage within our address space where we write our CICS trace entries, which will then get written out to a system dump if an S dump is taken, for example. Now, as part of the move to improve virtual storage constraint relief, development has moved a number of Kix resources within the address space to above the bar to exploit 64-bit storage, and we now maintain our trace table above the 16-megabyte bar. And this is good because it frees up space in 31-bit addressing for other usage in your region. The default size of the trace table is 4 megabytes. I personally like to see it higher than that. I've seen busy production systems easily fill up 5 megabytes in a few seconds. So I like a good 10-megabyte trace table, typically for problem recreation, if that's possible. The other relatively new parameter is TS main limit, and again, this reflects improvements to virtual storage constraint relief in Kix TS version 4, where main temporary storage control blocks and state data are now held above the bar rather than in 31-bit storage above the line. A main temporary storage is often a big part of a CICS storage usage. So this has freed up quite a bit of space by doing that in typical systems. Now, the reason why there's a limit is to prevent a problem with, for example, a rogue application that was looping writing to temporary storage. So we have this concept of TS main limit, and it's saying that you cannot exceed 25% of your mem limit. And it's basically designed to stop a problem with runaway temporary storage use. I've touched on a couple of storage settings that aren't directly KIX-related, but they are relevant, so we'll mention those briefly. That's your region size and your mem limit. And these specify the amount of virtual storage for your address space. So region will give you the limit for your 24-bit and 31-bit storage, and mem limit for your above-the-bar storage. And you can specify these in the job, on the exec statement, or you can use IEFUC, the installation exit, to restrict those. Just before we move on, it's worth mentioning as regards EDSA min that in KIX-CICS version 5.1, the default for the EDSA min has been increased from 48 meg, which is what it used to be, to 800 megabytes. And there's been a question as to why that was done, and it's part of the virtual storage constraint relief work that's been going on within the KIX development, moving storage above the line, for example. But it is worth being aware of because, for example, if you have an IEF UC installation exit limiting the region size, that may now be an issue. So it's worth reviewing that and being aware of the fact that the default now for EDSA lin is 800 megabytes in CICS version 5.1. So if we could move on to FOIL 18 then, please. So we have a number of settings that are specific to the way that KIX manages storage. Storage protection, this is defaulting to no, but if you specify it to yes, it will mean that KIX observes your storage and execution keys, and it will mean that we will allocate storage for the user and the shared DSAs from user key or key 9 pages. And this allows us to separate KIX key 8, and user key 9 storage in the address space, and we can use it to prevent overlays of KIX key storage by user key execution programs. Building on top of storage protection is transaction isolation. Again, we default to no. If you set it to yes and you're using storage protection, then your user key pass lifetime storage of your transactions that are defined with isolate yes are isolated from other user key programs or other transactions. Now, there are some restrictions with TranISO, for example, vSAN NSR isn't supported for transactions like that. And again, it's worth being aware, there's no benefit to using it in a region where you aren't executing user code, so for example, a pure TOR or an FLR. It doesn't apply to our 64-bit storage management. It's for 24-bit and 31-bit storage in our address space. The other two are command protection and rent PGM. Command protection, this allows KIX to validate the addresses passed to it by applications to ensure they are valid addresses that KIX should then update as output areas for commands. And rent PGM, this will default to protect, but you can set it to no protect, and this will determine which type of storage key that KIX will get main storage for the read-only DSAs from. So if you have it set to protect, then your re-entry programs will be loaded into key 0 protected storage areas. And finally, there are three parameters that relate to storage check-in and storage recovery that I'll touch on. There's the check STRM parameter, and this is to validate TIOA storage, terminal input-output areas, looking for storage violations occurring in those. Check STSK, this is to validate transaction storage, so the storage areas on your transaction storage chain, current task, are validated and checked for corruption. And there's also a parameter called storage recovery. This defaults to no, but if it's set to yes, it means that KIX will try to repair any storage violation that it detects. And you may or may not want that set. As I say, it defaults to no, and we'll append the task by default if we detect a storage violation. So they're the main system definition parameters that relates to storage. So at that point, I'm going to hand on to Byron to answer question 5 now.
Thank you very much. If you would, move to slide 19. What storage tuning parameters are available? Move to slide 20, please. There are a number of different options in which to tune your storage in CICS transaction server. From a system initialization table perspective, parameters autodisk and RUWA pool can be used to minimize the number of git mains and free mains that Kix performs on behalf of language environment. Autodisk is language environment's automatic storage tuning. RUWA pool allocates run unit work area storage pool for language environments during task initialization. You can use these two options in any combination to best tune your Kix environment. The benefit of these functions can be checked by running a Kix storage report to show the number of git mains and free mains in a region when either or both of the functions are active and comparing the results with previous runs of CICS. From a transaction perspective, the task data load parameter is effective in properly tuning the storage which is used. Task data load specifies whether task lifetime storage acquired by Kix for the duration of the transaction can be located above the 16 meg line in virtual storage. All transactions should be defined as task data log any, which, by the way, has been made the default in CICS 5.1. This better utilizes storage above the 16 meg line. The data location parameter assists with tuning your storage from the program definition perspective. Data location specifies the location of the data when commands use set option that can return a data address to an application. Please continue to slide 21. Last but not least, there are more language environment information parameters which can be helpful in tuning your Kix storage. These parameters can be set via the storage tuning user exit CEECSTX. Parameters all 31, stack, live stack, heap, any heap, and below heap help to define where storage resides. Please note, CICS has specific defaults for these PARMs. All 31 specifies whether the application can run entirely in A-mode 31 or whether the application has one or more A-mode 24 routines. The Kix default is all 31 on. Stack controls the allocation of the thread's stack storage for both upward and downward growing stacks. The Kix default, stack, 4K, 4080, anywhere, keep, 4K, 4080. Live stack controls the allocation of the thread's library stack storage. The default for live stack is 32, 4080, free. Heap controls the allocation of the user heap storage and specifies how the storage is managed. Kix defaults for heap are 4K, 4080, anywhere, keep, 4K, 4080. Any heap controls the allocation of the unrestricted library heap storage, basically the anywhere heap. Kix default for any heap are 4K, 4080, anywhere, free. Below heap controls the allocation of the restricted library heap storage. Kix default, below heap, 4K, 4080, free. At this point, I will turn the presentation back over to Julian for question number 6.
Thank you, Byron. So if we move on to the next slide. So question number 6. So the question is, how is storage above the bar managed, and specifically with respect to channels and containers? And a statement here saying the current doc is a little bit unclear about when we allocate storage for channels and containers and when the storage gets released. And there's an example here about a long-running transaction which may issue many executives link program channel commands. So if we move on to the next slide, 23. Channels and containers, what are they? Well, containers hold named data blocks for passing between programs. And containers are grouped into channels. So a channel is an umbrella under which many containers may sit. And storage storage for these containers is allocated above the bar, but there is a limit of 5% of mem limit per task. And if a task tries to create a container or create a channel which exceeds this 5% limit, it will be abandoned by CICS. So when do we allocate container storage? Well, a number of commands which will create a container. First of all, the main one is executkix put or executkix put 64 container channel, and there I've given an example of a new channel. Or an executkix move container will also create a new container, although it will actually destroy an old container. So although we're creating a new container, we shouldn't actually see any extra container storage allocated as part of that move container. And also executkix start trans ID channel. So if a task has already created a channel, then it's trying to create a new task and pass the channel to that task, we've got to take a copy of that channel because the task that's issued the start command may terminate, and if it terminates, it may destroy the channel that it's passed on the executkick start command. So we will see a copy of the channel created as part of the start command. So if we move on to the next slide. So slide 24, when do we release this container storage? Well, an executkix delete container name container command will delete container storage. If an executkix return is issued by an application, then that deletes all channels and all the containers that sit underneath those channels which were created by the application which is issuing the executkix return command. And that's except for a channel which is named on the executkix return. So the top level program for a transaction can issue an executkix return trans ID channel, and at that time the channel is reserved and will actually be moved from the transaction to the terminal on which the transaction is running, and that will be retained as part of a pseudo conversation so that the next transaction that starts on that terminal will inherit the channel that's named on the executkix return command. So that's one thing which will cause kix to destroy a channel. Also, an executkix transfer control command will delete all channels and all the containers that sit under those channels which were created by the program that is issuing the transfer control command. But again, there's one exception to that. A transfer control command can specify a channel name. And we don't want to destroy that channel because it needs to be used by the program which is being transfer controlled to. So then if we move on to the next slide, 25. So we've got some more examples of when we release container storage. If a transaction abends, then kix will automatically deallocate all container storage as each program link level is unstacked by the kix abend processing. So if there are no event handlers active for that transaction, all the channel storage will be deallocated. If there's an event handler at a particular link level, that will stop the event in its process. Any lower level programs that have been unstacked, their channels will have been deleted. But the program which traps the event, any channels that it created will still exist. And there's another example of when we release container storage. I mentioned earlier that if we issue an executkix return trans ID channel, then that channel gets moved underneath the terminal under which that transaction was running. Now, if that terminal is just sitting there waiting for the next transaction to run, but we suffer a lost term condition, for example, and that terminal is destroyed, then kix will automatically clean up any channel storage that sits underneath that terminal. So basically, there are two ways to destroy container storage, you either issue an executive delete command to destroy the storage, or you rely on the termination of the program which allocated that storage to destroy the storage. So there's an interesting little technique that you can employ. If you have a long-running program that issues executkit link with channel, then a way it could actually destroy the channel storage is it could issue a transfer control command to itself. Now, that would destroy all the channels which sit underneath that program. It would mean that a new instance of that program starts running, and therefore that program will have a new working storage area. But it's a technique that you could employ if you wanted to have Kix automatically perform cleanup of channel storage. So that completes the answers to question 6, and it's over to Andy for question 7.
Right, thank you, Julian. If we could move on to foil 26, please. So the question is, why does the CICS 5.1 upgrade manual say the EDSA LIM for the CPSM WUI and CNAS be set to 800 megabytes? And we have touched on that already. If we could move on to foil 27, please. As I said, the default for the EDSA LIM in CICS 5.1 is now 800 megabytes. And there are a number of reasons why this would affect users of Kix systems such as the WUI or the CNAS. Because we've got increases within our internal state management, we've got the need for extra storage above the 16 megabyte line in CICS 5.1. So one example is that we now allow a higher max task value up to 2000 rather than 999, which we had in lower releases. The increase in storage sizes is also down to the fact that within CPSM, various of the components within the CPSM product will pre-allocate storage that is used by CPSM for its internal functions. And this is to allow fast allocation and deallocation of the work areas that CPSM uses without having to trouble CICS to get main storage. There are areas that CPSM has to pre-allocate for its own use. And of course, as there are increases in CICS functionality, which we have in every release and version, so the ability for CPSM to track and handle that data increases its storage requirements as well. So in CICS 5.1, as an example, with our support for the cloud environment, we have new resources such as platform and applications, and of course these incorporate new control blocks and save areas that have to be preserved, and there's an increase in the demand for storage for those, and that follows on for CPSM requirements as well. So basically, as Kix releases new functionality, CPSM has to adopt that functionality, and this inevitably leads to the need for more Kix storage in order to do so. So if we could move on to foil 28, please, for question 8. How do the CNAS and the WUI use the EDSA, the above-the-line Kix DSA storage? So if we could go to foil 29, please. So the CNAS, the controlling Kix region for the various NASes in the CPSM environment, will use the ECDSA. So it's the Kix DSA area above the line. And it will use that for the data that it needs to use that does not need to be shared with the NASes under its control. And also for data that doesn't need to persist across a Kix restart. So it's effectively its internal state data held within the ECDSA. If you think about the CPSM WUI, effectively it's a CPSM application. It has no data persistence requirements, and it doesn't directly exploit the data spaces that CPSM uses. All its storage use is for its own internal state management, and that is primarily in the ECDSA. If there is any non-ECDSA usage, then that would come down to any requirements that the CICS system programming interface might demand on it for some reason. So primarily we're using the ECDSA storage above the KIC's 60 megabyte line for the CMAS and the WUI's internal state data management for data that doesn't need to be shared between NASes and data which doesn't need to persist across a CICS restart. Okay, if we could move on to question 9, please, on foil 30. So the question is, what is the ESSS and how are its data spaces used by the CPSM CMAS? So if we could go on to foil 31, please. So what and how are data spaces used is a very open question, obviously. Data spaces are provided by ZOS to contain non-program storage, so it's basically data that can be referenced by other address spaces, and they're used internally in KICS. We use them, for example, with the shared data tables. They're also used by CPSM, and they are associated with a given CMAS. Now, the CMAS will have at least 10 data spaces for its use, and they're used between the various CPSM components to handle different CPSM-related data for each of the components. They're owned by the ESSS address space, which is another CPSM address space, and there's one of these per active CPSM version in your LTAR. So a single ESSS instance will own the data spaces that are used by a given CPSM version. And it holds that data on behalf of all the active CMASs for that CPSM version. Now, data spaces are used between the CMASs and the MASs for passing data and also for communication purposes. And the volumes of data that can flow can be very large, depending on the workload and the size of your KICSFLEX and what activity is taking place and being inquired upon during the run. So what will happen is that if the usage has a surge and there's a spike in storage usage, then CPSM will automatically allocate secondary data spaces to accommodate these occasional usage surges as and when required. That completes my answer to question 9. So at that point, I'm going to pass the baton on, I think, back to David now for the remainder of the WSTE.
I'd like to thank our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this time, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
At this time, we have no questions.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to advance to slide 34 and pass the presentation over to Byron for a summary of today's presentation.
Thank you, David. In conclusion, we've discussed the short on storage conditions and demystified storage violations. In detail, we have identified the superparameters which affect KIC storage and the parameters which assist with tuning your KICS region from multiple perspectives. Thanks for attending the session, and hopefully a bit more light has been shed on KIC storage for you and your team. Thank you. Now back to David.
Thank you, Byron, for the great summary. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and a sincere thank you to our panel of experts for presenting today.